Everybody, it's Thursday, March 10th, and you're listening to Against the Current, brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM's News Collective. We aim to bring you an alternative and undercover current affairs coverage from Vancouver and Lower Mainland every Thursday at 3 p.m. We're based on UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Okay, so here at UBC is election time. From March 7th till 11th, students can cast their votes for the new AMS president, various VPs, Senate, and Board of Governors. There's also referendum voting going on as well, one of which we cover in today's show. So for today's show, Fride from the News Collective team sat down with Alex from the Bike Kitchen to talk about their referendum for fee increase. And we will also take a listen to the Social Justice Forum that took place this past Monday and hear from various presidential and vice presidential candidates about their views on various social and environmental justice issues on campus. First, let's hear from Hrday.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the Vancouver campus at the University of British Columbia. We're here with Alex from the Bike Kitchen, which is a UBC institution that's very close to me. I've visited that place a number of times just to get help with my own bike, and I often joke about how it's more or less of a bike kitchen, more of a bike hospital. So Alex is here to talk to us about the referendum that will be taking place next week from March 7th to 11th. So Alex, just tell us about what the Bike Kitchen is.
Yeah, so the Bike Kitchen is a community bike shop that has been around since 1998. Originally founded as a way for students to have bikes to ride around campus, teach themselves how to fix it, and soon it became apparent that people wanted to have their bikes fixed, and so the Bike Kitchen, as it kind of currently is known, was formulated. So yeah, in the pre-pandemic days, our main focus was teaching people how to fix their bicycles. Really, our whole shtick is education, empowerment, getting people on their bikes, but also knowing how to then put them back together, maintain them. You know, as simple as like pumping up a tire, oiling a chain, to as complicated as building up your own bike kind of from the frame up. We have a large focus on social justice initiatives, so we run programs such as our Kids Bike Library, where we give up bikes to kids, and they can trade them up in size as they grow up. And we also run a program called BC Libre, which is a program where we give up bikes to migrant farm workers kind of in the Fraser Valley area, as they often have trouble accessing transportation. So yeah, we run a variety of programs. Our best known thing, of course, is people coming in to have their bikes fixed or hanging out with us to fix their bikes. So yeah, that's kind of us in a nutshell, but yeah, we do a lot out of our little shop.
That sounds incredible. And, you know, I didn't know a lot of this before talking to you today, because my understanding was that the Bike Kitchen was primarily a place where I would go whenever, you know, my bike would need a little fixing up. I think I broke my chain earlier last year, and the people over at the Bike Kitchen were really kind to help me out with that. So how many staff and volunteers do you have over at the Bike Kitchen?
Totally. So our organization is kind of split in two halves. We have our program side, which is kind of like the office, behind the scenes stuff, and then we have the shop side, which is the mechanics, the people you interface with the most. So on the program side, we float anywhere from 3 to maybe 10 staff, depending on the season. Currently, I think we're at about 4 or 5. And then on the mechanic side, shop side, typically anywhere from like 8 to 10 to 15. It really fluctuates. We're very seasonal, weather based. But yeah, so all in all, probably around 20 people working. And then we have a board of directors that's around roughly 10 people. And then our volunteer pool, with, you know, pre-pandemic days, would have been probably in the hundreds, I would imagine. We were running volunteer nights twice a week, and we had like quite a few people that would come through. Since the pandemic started, we've been halting that stuff. But yeah, so we have a fairly large volunteer support pool. But since the pandemic has begun, it's mostly been just the core staff, the skeleton crew that have been keeping it running.
Of course, that's great to hear that, you know, pre-pandemic there was such a huge part of the community that was involved with the Bike Kitchen. And sort of coming out of the pandemic now, how has the pandemic impacted the Bike Kitchen?
Yeah, in many ways, not good ways. March 16th, almost 2 years ago, was our last day open, and we received notice that we would have to close up. So we kind of scrambled to get people their bikes, and we were closed as of the 17th of March in 2020. We reopened early July, so we were not able to operate for about 4 months or so, which was tough. As for a lot of us, this is our primary source of income. This is our main job. Like, I've been working in the bike industry for about 10 years is like all I do. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely tough. And we had shipments that were en route, parts got lost in the mail. That was a bit difficult. And also people's bikes were stuck in the bike shop. So I spent a few months contacting people, running into the bike shop to, you know, sort that out with people. So we reopened in July of 2020. And for the following 14 months, there was really no one on campus, which is tough as the student staff and faculty of UBC are kind of our primary clientele. We do have like some loyal fans who will come out from, you know, East Van, Richmond, wherever. So we pretty much didn't have customers for like 14 months, which is tough. And again, we have paid staff, so we have had those bills to pay, and we weren't generating necessarily a lot of revenue. And yes, students came back this September, which was great. We closed in December, and then we came back to Omicron, and things were off again. So it's been a real roller coaster financially, emotionally. Thankfully, our staffing situation has been really stable. So, you know, big shout out to our staff for sticking it out. It's been a tough time for everyone. But so we're definitely financially hurting from the big shutdown and also not having folks on campus, which is kind of what brought up this whole campaign, the hashtag Save the Bike Kitchen campaign.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it sounds like it's been an incredibly challenging period for the Bike Kitchen, and that despite all of these challenges, the Bike Kitchen has persevered because of how important it is to the campus community. And, you know, for me personally, like, biking has been one of those outlets that I use to safely sort of enjoy myself during the pandemic, because when everything else shut down, you know, biking is that one thing that sort of kept me going, whether that was just going out to Stanley Park or just biking around the trails here on campus. So what is at stake here in this referendum next week between March 7th and 11th?
So our big ask that we're putting out to folks is to increase our student fee. I believe the origin of our student fee was in 2013. I may be wrong, but around there, we asked for $1 from students. And with inflation, that's crawled up to $1.14, which is currently where we're sitting. We're asking for that to be bumped up by $3.86. So the equivalent of, like, I don't know, a cheap coffee, which would bring us to $5. The thing we're hoping with that is to have secure funding, financial stability, which would allow us to continue operating, you know, rather there's a next wave or there's school goes online again, like, we would be secure and be able to continue operating without any disruptions. With that, we would then be able to pivot back to kind of doing all the stuff we like. So since the beginning of the pandemic, our main focus has been servicing the bicycles of customers. So we're doing the tune-ups, the big repairs, as that's a money generating thing. This is our only time we've ever operated as a service only shop. Typically, our main focus was teaching. So if we're able to, you know, have that money set aside and know it's there, we can say, okay, cool, now we can really focus on the fun stuff, teaching, getting people in there, running our women and queer nights, running our pride nights, getting back to having volunteers in the shop, hanging out, doing stuff and building bikes for people who really need them. We've just, you know, been piloting some programs. Like, we did a giveaway for Black Indigenous folks and people of color just recently this past week. And last year we did a big fundraiser for tune-ups for Asian folks and Pacific Islanders. So we're really trying to find ways to be creative and still connect with the community And yeah, having the student fee increase go through would give us so much more capacity to really share the wealth, as it were, and get people on bikes. And yeah, as you mentioned, it's a great way to stay active while all this stuff is still going on.
Absolutely. So, from what I'm hearing, despite all of these economical challenges and despite the pandemic, you've continued to sort of serve the UBC community as you did pre-pandemic. You mentioned before the interview that you were at about 13,000 transactions, which went all the way down to $8,000 and $5,000 in the subsequent years. So I can't imagine how any business would survive that, but I'm so glad that it has, because I certainly feel that the Bike Kitchen is just such an important part of the campus community. So, for our listeners, tell us how they can support the Bike Kitchen right now.
Yeah, totally. So for our UBC student listeners, March 7th to 11th, there will be the AMS elections going down. We have a referendum question on the ballot, which is, do you support a fee increase of $3.86 for the Bike Kitchen? If people can vote yes, that would be amazing. We need to hit 4,762 votes. And if that passes, we are good. And then for all of our lovely non-student listeners, we are running a GoFundMe campaign. Link can be found in our various socials and our website. And yeah, we're asking for folks to donate money if they can. Our big lofty goal is $20,000. And we have an amazing person who's thrown down a challenge to do a big ride, what's called a hashtag Everesting. So if we hit $10,000, our friend Tyrone is going to climb the height of Mount Everest. You pick one hill and you go up and down it all day. It takes about 14, 15 hours. And yeah, if we hit 20,000, he'll do it on a fixed gear bike, which is really intense because you don't have gears. You have, well, single gear.
Right.
So yeah, so if you're a student, please vote 7th to 11th. It's all online. It'll be super easy peasy. And if you are not a student, yeah, check out our GoFundMe, donate if you can, or just share with your friends and family, really.
Awesome. So, folks, you heard it here. You can go check out the Bike Kitchen on Instagram at the Bike Kitchen, or ha at hashtag Save the Bike Kitchen. Thank you so much for being here with us, Alex. And I certainly hope that we can save the Bike Kitchen. Pleasure talking to you.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me.
The haunting debut album Black Moon by Civic TV provides a cinematic backdrop, a modern-day symphony of the dark and light that is our collective reality. Take a listen to Black Moon, now available via Flemish Eye Records and on all streaming platforms.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
There is a drinking water settlement for First Nations, and the claims process is now open. The settlement includes $1.8 billion in compensation to some individuals and First Nations subject to long-term drinking water advisories from November 1995 to June 2021, and $50 million for eligible individuals who suffered specific injuries due to these advisories. If you are a First Nations member impacted by a long-term drinking water advisory, you may be eligible for compensation. You will also have free access to legal advice and support while filling out your claim. This is the first drop in recognizing the communities impacted. For more information or to submit your claim, visit firstnationsdrinkingwater.ca.
Thanks, Renee and Alex. Now let's take a listen to the Social Justice Forum.
All right, so presidential candidates, we're going to start from right to left with the introductions.
Hello, everybody. My name is Sydney Herrickel. I'm a third-year philosophy student. I use all pronouns, and I'm so happy to be talking to everyone today. I love gay people. I love indigenous people. I love most people. My platform is focusing on three things. Tuition decreases, everyone loves that. Focusing on increasing socialization spaces, more specialized socialization spaces for gay people and indigenous people would be helpful as well, which we do have some of that, but we could get more, of course. And then also making it easier for students to engage with other students, decreasing barriers to create clubs, giving clubs, smaller clubs, the opportunity to book rooms, whereas you need usually like 25 to 50 people, and just making it easier for everyone to make friends and be a big, happy family here at UBC. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Saad. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm running to be your next AMS president. I'm running on a vision for a new AMS. The AMS needs to be ambitious with the way that we're supporting students, with the way that we're supporting ADI at the AMS, climate justice, and harm reduction initiatives at the AMS. At the AMS, I work directly with the Equity and Inclusion Subcommittee on the formation of our equity goals this year, and that was something that I cannot wait to continue work on. I also worked with SASC on the certification for SASC to become a naloxone distributor and to make sure that we are pushing harm reduction out to students as much as possible. Feel free to learn more about my campaign, myself, and my vision for a new AMS at www.voteforsaad.ca. Thank you.
Hi there. Good afternoon. My name is Wesley. My pronouns are he, him. I'm a third-year student. I think part of my campaign is just for engagement. I think what UBC and a lot of students lack and miss is a community, and it's part of my hope to make the AMS more as a community, and also part of my campaign is food security. I think that's very important because food is very essential and it's quite expensive on campus. So I definitely would like to continue to support that and just to foster in a sense of community on campus. Thank you.
Hey, how's it going? I'm Tate Kaufman. I'm running for president in addition to Board of Governors and Senate. Main points about my platform is making sure that classes get back on campus fully, in addition to providing support for immunocompromised students. They experienced issues before the pandemic with attending classes due to health issues, and the support wasn't there. We want to make sure going forwards that the support is there for them. In terms of the groups that are here today, I'm going to start with the SASC. The number one thing is the SASC needs more funding. It's had almost double the demand on its services over the past 2 years. One of the ways we can maybe think about getting the SASC more funding is finding a way to revenue share from AMS businesses to the SASC. That could be done through a flat portion of the revenue, or what I think might be a good idea is having special menu items at AMS restaurants and stuff, of which the proceeds when purchased go towards the SASC. In addition to that, working on increasing the clarification.
All right, and that's time, sorry.
Hi everyone, my name is Ashana and I'm running to be your next AMS president. Over the past year, I've worked and served you as your VP Academic and University Affairs at the AMS, and I advocated for a lot of things like the extension of the drop date, but also $1 million towards reducing food insecurity, $9 million towards financial aid. That's money directly going back into students' pockets. I also frequently partnered with resource groups to have naloxone training and fentanyl strips distributed throughout campus. And as your next AMS president, there are some things I want to focus on. One is reducing the cost of education, addressing affordability holistically, pushing for a rent freeze, centering social justice and climate justice at the center of all AMS operations and advocacy. That's something I've tried to do as VP AUA, but I want to make sure that's happening at every single department of the AMS, and along with more and more mental health services and harm reduction services on campus. So I won't go over time now, but happy to be here. Thank you all for coming out.
Hi, everybody. I am Esme, and I'm here representing Remy the Rat. He's out here. Remy is running on a platform of radical justice issues, so really happy to be here. Work with students to make your dreams come true when it comes to justice through the AMS. Remy is looking to center climate justice, food security, open kitchen for all, work with resource groups, make sure that the SASC has funding, that the resource groups has funding to build community, build capacity for these issues. Also wanting to look at affordability holistically throughout UBC campus. Overall, like making sure that we have still like pandemic equity furthering the Indigenous strategic plan throughout the AMS and working with equity groups throughout the AMS. So thank you.
All right, thank you so much for those introductions. Because we have so many presidential candidates, we're gonna have 1 minute per question. So we will start off with the first question, and we are gonna start off from right to left. So you will be the first one. So for all candidates, the UBC Indigenous Strategic Plan is a comprehensive set of goals and attached strategies and actions with the intention of decolonizing physical spaces on campus, indigenizing research, and providing a variety of support systems to Indigenous students. What will you do to ensure this plan can actively come to fruition in order to create tangible changes at UBC? If elected, what are your commitments to support decolonization efforts on campus? As decolonization is often in resistance to colonial structures such as the AMS. And we will start time now.
Thank you. I have talked about this extensively at the debates, and I'd love to talk about it again. My goal as AMS president is to create an elected position for Indigenous students. That way we can guarantee that Indigenous students have a voice here at the AMS. I would also like to restructure the Indigenous committee so that the head is the elected Indigenous student and the rest are volunteers or other elected students if they so wish. And that every person on that committee is part of all of the other committees that the AMS has, so that every single committee that the AMS has and every single plan that the AMS is working towards has an Indigenous person on it and has an Indigenous voice to add to the conversation. That way we aren't making the plans and asking Indigenous students later, we're actively including them in the decision-making process.
Yeah, thank you so much for the question. I agree with Sydney. You know, I think that it's really important for us to be amplifying Indigenous voices and making sure that we're including them in discussions that are critical to the AMS's operations, governance, and advocacy. Which is why, you know, as AMS president, I would absolutely be committed towards making sure that we're including Indigenous students on-campus Indigenous groups in the formation of the AMS's strategic plan. The strategic plan will go over a lot of the operations, governance, and advocacy issues that the AMS has, and including them in those in the formation of that plan is essential. It's also really essential to include them in the renewal of the Sustainable Action Plan. We're going to be, embarking on this renewal and making sure that we're engaging with those students and that we're bringing out those voices and creating an environment where we're equitable in terms of pay structure and providing them with avenues for engagement on our strategic plans.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'd like to acknowledge that UBC and AMS, both of them are products of colonialism. We have to admit to that fact. And I think right now, something that me as a president, I would be definitely supporting is to involve more Indigenous process in the decision-making side of things. Because right now, a lot of times is we come up with something and then we ask them. I think it is not as ideal as we like to admit. I think definitely having them involved in the decision-making process is great. And, echoing Sydney, just elected position of Indigenous students is absolutely a great suggestion, and I think whoever is the next president should absolutely take that into account. Thank you.
Perfect. Within the AMS, I think there's a number of things we can do. The first one is trying to make sure that AMS spaces, such as the Nest, actually are oriented around celebrating Indigenous culture. The reality is that, well, there is a lot of important stuff about looking at the tragedies that have befallen the Indigenous community. We also need to work with integrating Indigenous knowledge and integrating Indigenous art into our spaces by commissioning Indigenous artists so that we can start to celebrate those cultures and bring those cultures back again. Within my role in the Senate, I would look to integrate more Indigenous knowledge into courses beyond a surface level, making sure that that knowledge is relevant to the course, is deep and celebratory of Indigenous culture.
Yeah, so there were a few calls to action from the ISP that came to mind as everybody was talking. I don't remember the exact number of the call to action, but here's a few things that I would do once elected as AMS president. There's a huge emphasis on engaging with Musqueam on design and development of UBC facilities, and I think there are many opportunities coming up for that through the Campus Vision 2050 and the review of the Housing Action Plan, which are going to be major, exactly, like opportunities where I would be advocating for Musqueam consent, not just engagement, and I think that's really key. Another one is to have equitable and timely compensation. I've highlighted that before, that I want to develop an internal policy to ensure that we are appropriately and timely compensating marginalized groups, including Indigenous students, and this is something that's very aligned with the Indigenous Strategic Plan. Apart from that, there's also one call to action. I think that was about prioritizing Indigenous businesses when it comes to procurement strategy. So I would do an audit of our food and beverage supply chains and ensure that we are also prioritizing Indigenous businesses and vendors. There's a lot more, but I'm out of time and I don't want to be cut off. But yeah, I'm fully committed to ensuring that the AMS is decolonizing itself. Thank you.
Yeah, so earlier today, we actually just had a event with the Indigenous Committee, so that was great. Thanks to all who organized that. Yeah, Sydney brought up a great point and shared about engaging Indigenous students through the Longhouse. So Remy really loves that idea, and making sure that Indigenous students get to be a more part of the AMS and like the decolonization process. Also want to go through the Indigenous Strategic Plan self-assessment with all committees throughout the AMS. If that hasn't already been done, make that a continual process. And make sure this is a priority throughout the strategic planning process as well. This will like spark discussion throughout the AMS to make sure that everybody who's a part of it is really engaging with these ideas of decolonization. Also like engaging with art and writing, such as Decolonization is Not a Metaphor by Tuck and Yang, and seeing how decolonization is really a part of our lives grounded. I love that idea of like bringing more like perhaps like Musqueam food and culture into the AMS spaces because Remy really believes that food is community.
That's
and,
time. Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for all your answers.
Thank you.
For our next question, we're going to start with Saad and go down the line, and then return to Sydney. And you will all have 1 minute again to respond to the question. We have noticed a lot of discussion around the need for improved mental health support systems, especially given the effect the pandemic has had. Students report long wait times, general unavailability, and financial barriers to accessing mental health support. If elected, how do you plan to prioritize and seriously address student well-being and mental health that supports students using an intersectional approach?
Yeah, absolutely. Throughout my time as the Vice President of External Affairs, we lobbied the federal and provincial government on making sure that they were prioritizing mental health support, because we saw the numbers, and the numbers were very, very concerning around, you know, the state of mental health for students. This past recent provincial lobby week, we lobbied the provincial government on conducting an extensive review on Here to Talk to make sure that it took into account the intersectionality of the students that it sought to support. support. And you know, we are going to be working with the provincial government for the next 2 months on that review. And so as if elected as AMS president, that'll include lobbying UBC, lobbying the federal government, lobbying the provincial government to provide more funding for these initiatives, because there simply isn't enough funding for mental health supports across post-secondary campuses across Canada. Additionally, you know, also working with, you know, our services to make sure that they have the right financial resources to handle the usages and the and the needs of students during the recovery from this pandemic. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, as some of you that might have went to the past debate, during one of the questions last week, I had a slightly minor anxiety attack on stage. I think this pandemic and school, combining both, it's stressful for students, and there's absolutely a lack of mental health support that is easily accessible to students, because I was just hearing like about this, you have to call them and then you have the long wait time. It's very daunting when you ask someone to go through all that just to get help. It's like, just that process itself is ridiculous. I think there are a couple approaches to this. Like, there are great service right now that supports this in UBC, are definitely more student. I think, yeah, I'm sorry, do we not have time to finish this?
Yeah, thank you. I think the number one thing that really needs to improve is simplifying the reimbursement process for using mental health services. Right now, for students who don't have direct billing at wherever they're getting their counseling, it can be an absolute pain to fill out the form each time and to get all that details in order just to get your reimbursement, especially since students are often paying out of pocket up front and may not have enough money in order to do so. So I think that's the number one thing, is simplifying the reimbursement process. And then number two, providing more opportunities for students to seek counseling with high quality counselors, whether they're on campus or off campus. But I know a number of students I've talked to have disliked the quality of counselors available directly through the AMS. So I think enabling more services from outside counselors is really important.
Yeah, so I completely recognize how important it is to have counselors who actually understand your experiences and identity. So this past year, I worked with the UBC Black Caucus to advocate for millions of dollars. No, not millions of dollars. This project was actually quite inexpensive and really worth it, to ensure that we're connecting Black students with Black counselors, and then to advocate for more funding, which would be in the range of millions of dollars, to ensure that that same work is being done for all equity-deserving groups on campus. Apart from that, the three-year services, so I will continue ensuring that UBC is committing millions to that. We also have the three-year services review coming up next year, and I think that's a great opportunity to enhance peer support and ensure that we have that kind of understanding of intersectional identities in peer support as well, and looking at the review from that lens. And the third thing is, I will increase the AMS student mental health and psychology coverage permanently from $1,000 to $1,250 for better mental health support overall. Thank you.
Yes, as many of you might know, rats are really notorious for being able to survive and thrive anywhere, except for Alberta, unfortunately. Alberta is rats are illegal in Alberta. Remy would like to partner more with like UBC Wellbeing and you know, that motto of like thriving and like trying to make sure that people have like mental health resources and just like holistically the support that they need in order to improve mental health, because mental health is really connected to all parts of our lives, right? And so if we're bogged down by the systems of like colonization and capitalism, then there's like, we have to look at all of these different facets of life that bring down mental health. So yeah, promoting resources and building community, promoting clubs, and making sure that everybody has
time.
Like,
thank you so much.
Mental health has been a huge barrier for students, especially in a university setting. I think that what's important for students is that they are able to get their classwork done and to actually go to their lectures without having mental health impeding them. And something that's important for that is having the ability to record lectures or live stream lectures, just so that people who have a hard time getting to class some days are able to do that. I think we should also have on-campus services for students that are paid for by our student insurance, so that students have somewhere to go that's on campus with little to no barriers to access mental health in the first place. I think that I agree with Ashana that we should increase permanently the amount that we get for mental health services. Currently it's $1,500, which for a good therapist is about 10 sessions and for 1 year, and that is not nearly enough. I would love to advocate for something even more than that, than just $1,500.
That's fine, thank you.
All right, and then we'll move one down the line for our last question. All right, so in the past, many AMS candidates have had the tendency to overpromise and underdeliver. Many of your platforms include a wide and numerous range of campaign promises, from housing affordability to improving campus to student life and safety to climate action and so on. How will you ensure you are not overpromising and underdelivering on all of these commitments and ensure social justice related initiatives are prioritized in a tangible, real way within this wide range of campaign promises?
Me going to the office will be, I hope to bring in a different energy into it, because I have not been involved with the AMS previously. I'm willing to, like, if something I've sent and the school is not willing, I'll basically bring it up and negotiate, because it might be not the exact thing, but the thing that I brought up will be addressed. Let's say food security, continued support for Sprouts in terms of funding and stuff. Definitely that, if the school is not willing, you can be sure I'm gonna fight like there's no tomorrow with them, because students need support. The school clearly has money to spare, and I don't think that money should be wasted somewhere else and should be reinvested back into the student body. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's really important to have a very specific and actionable campaign. If you go to my campaign website, it's not an overly broad platform, because within a one-year term, there's only so much you can do. That's why I believe we need to work on things that we can actually achieve within the scope of a year, such as I discussed earlier, changing I-17 so that it informs students more adequately about what investigations entail when it comes to the process for sexual assaults, in addition to working something we can immediately do to try and integrate more Indigenous art into UBC spaces. So I think we need to have short-term actionable goals within a one-year term, and as we take those steps one by one, that's how we make a better campus. Because if you're just making a plan for the next president, then at the end of the day, work is just going to get pushed off and nothing's going to get done, no improvements are going to get made. So it's about taking those steps one by one, getting day by day actionable improvements.
Yeah, okay, so I've spent the entire last year holding the university accountable to their promises, and I will do the same for myself. I intend to develop metrics that will track the progress of each of my campaign promises and goals at the beginning of the year, and continue to update council and partners like the resource groups on the progress of those goals. And as for overpromising and under-delivering, to be honest, that's not something I can really speak to, because that's just not something I do. Last year I had a very ambitious platform, and right now I'm on track to complete 100% of those goals. So with me, you can rest assured that I have a proven track record. I will deliver what I'm promising. Thank you.
So realistically, the rat is not going to make every dream come true, even if he were going to become president for the year. But he's here to prompt students to think about what they'd like to see their AMS do and get involved in this election. What do you want to see all the candidates here putting on their platforms and making sure that they do in case they become president? That being said, social justice is the main reason that Remy is running. So if he were to be president, he would definitely promote and prioritize that.
I believe that what's important is that we are starting to work on the things that are important for our campus, even if we don't believe that it can be accomplished within our 1 year terms as president. I think that being able to start these projects as soon as possible and work on them as much as we can gives future administrations the ability to work and hopefully finish these projects that seem too large to handle sometimes. We can do this by creating real, tangible goals that can be accomplished within short periods of time that can eventually be led on to the big future goal by creating small steps that we can accomplish within 1 year, and then hopefully we can finish it within several years. I know that my platform is short and concise. I did not write over 20 pages of campaign promises because I know that that's almost impossible to do as a president. And as president, I know that I will focus on the things that are important and not everything all at once.
Yeah, you know, last year when I ran for VP External, one of my major promises was to lobby the federal government on the permanent removal of interest rates on federal student loans. This year, during this federal election, we got that done. That commitment is in the Minister of Workforce Development's mandate letter. Additionally, I also promised, you know, stuff around the SkyTrain. Back in September, the provincial and federal government committed 80% funding towards the SkyTrain to UBC's business case. I'm on track to complete my goals, and my goals are pragmatic but ambitious. Additionally, to keep myself accountable, I would be ensuring that we're, you know, providing students with quarterly brief informational and succinct updates. Students don't have the time to read 30-page reports, about the operation, about the work that the AMS is doing. Additionally, you know, also making sure that we're creating those roundtable discussions and working with the resource groups on campus BIPOC organizations and Indigenous students in the decisions that we make, whether that's the strategic plan, whether that's the AMS's strategic plan, the AMS's governance review, or the AMS's sustainable action plan. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for your answers. In the interest of time, we're only going to have time for about one audience question. So if anyone has a burning question they would like to ask, you can put up your hand now.
Hi, so my question is actually just for Saad. So because you are a member of Greek Life and you get a lot of support from the Greek Life system, my question kind of relates to that. So on the website Greek Rank, so because of the derogatory messages about other candidates, especially Ashana on the Greek Rank website, I was wondering why have you made any comments about this? Why haven't you spoken up about these negative comments?
Absolutely. I don't check in on Greek Rank, so I wasn't aware of that. Greek Rank is, you know, every single, you know, person who's in the Greek system knows that Greek Rank is not a healthy platform. You know, it is a platform which, you know, is anonymous and, you know, really doesn't allow for there to be, you know, meaningful conversation. You know, I absolutely, you know, would love to speak out about that. And I think that it's, you know, absolutely disgusting for anyone to make any comments about any candidates, you know, that are derogatory or that are pejorative.
All right, great. Well, that's perfect for presidents. Let's give one more round of applause for our presidential candidates. Thank you, folks, so much. We are now going to move on to the VP Finance question. So if you're a VP Finance candidate, please come on up. We'll start with 1 minute introductions. Just be mindful of time. And Priscilla will be over here with the timers. Let's start on the right with Rita. Thank you.
Should I just go? Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Rita Jin. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm running to be your next Vice President of Finance. So as the current Associate Vice President of Finance, I do believe I have a lot of experience about the technical side of finance, which I can bring to this role. In addition, I've consulted with different groups like Climate Justice UBC to see how we can make the AMS more sustainable in particular. And I'm really excited to be joining this forum to talk about that. And I look forward to having people read up on my platform about what I'm all for and making sure that the AMS is transparent, is sustainable, and making sure that we're providing equal opportunities for everyone. In particular, my platform goals are providing membership fee subsidies, helping utilize the fund reserves that we currently have, providing more, you know, financial systems advice and tips and training for treasurers, as well as increasing the health coverage and making sure that virtual healthcare is accessible. So thank you, and I look forward to the questions.
So, hi guys, my name is Angad Gill. My pronouns are he, him, his. And as most of you may know, I'm running to be your next AMS VP Finance. I'm driven to make the financial decisions of the AMS more student-centric and all-inclusive. Talking more about the resource groups, I feel that resource groups are an organized voice on campus for diverse communities within UBC. They not only provide a way to communicate the needs of these diverse groups to the campus community, but also celebrate the voices, identities, experiences, and talents of the groups. Post-pandemic, they are recovering with their evolved needs, and so is the way the students interact with them. I plan to consult with resource groups and make their voices heard by holding consultation processes for taking key decisions about students and initiatives on campus. This is also the reason for introducing a social justice fund in my platform that caters to empower and fuel projects and social justice causes that are important to student membership. For more detailed information, please visit angad.com/vpf.com. Thank you.
All right, guys. I will get us started today with a few questions for the VP Finance candidates. First of all, these questions, you will have about a minute and a half to respond to them, and we will start by Rita. The first question is, the fee reduction and opt-out referendum on the ballot this year proposes a reduction of fees for funds that already have significant amounts of money. Do you support this referendum, and how will you ensure that this doesn't result in a reduction of important funding and services available to students and student groups? And what efforts will you take to ensure that funds are accessible and being properly allocated so that they are most useful for students?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the referendum does pose that change, and that's because we want to hear from the students to see if we have been affordable with all these fees that we've been collecting. Of course, I support the funding of our services, and I think it's really important that money is going towards, you know, resource groups, towards SASC, to make sure that these services are offered and to protect our students. And one thing that I'm hoping to do to make sure the funds are properly used, like your third question, is to consult with all the resource groups and the resource group allocation committee at the beginning of the fiscal year, so that would be May and June, to make sure that everyone is on the same page about where that money is going and how that fund should be allocated. That allows the funds to be on track and that the resource groups can really utilize that for the benefits of the students. And another point that I really want to focus on if elected is to make sure that the resource group fund is super accessible, and I will be working very hard and to be on the same page with these resource groups and student organizations to do so. Thank you.
First of all, I'm in support of this referendum, and I really believe that we need to focus the funds where they're of course needed, and it's also in one of my platform points that I want to put a cap on unnecessary departmental spendings. And having said that, I want to increase transparency by holding participatory budgeting, which is also my platform point. I want to have the I want the students to actually have the say where the funds are being actually spent, so that they are also inclusive of this process. And as I mentioned in my earlier introduction, that I want to take along the resource groups as well, so that we can use all the benefits provided by them. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you much. Thank you very much to both of you all. And now Gwen has some questions from the Pride Collective.
Hello. So I'm here to ask you today, there are many areas of gender-affirming care that student care does not cover adequately. What are your plans for expanding the AMS, GSS, health, and dental plan coverage for gender-affirming care? How will you follow up on these efforts to ensure that they are benefiting trans and gender-diverse students?
So that's a really good question. First of all, it might not be directly related, but this time I want the student care to have a more flexible plan, which includes enhanced and basic coverage. Second of all, as I have always been mentioning that I want to have a all-inclusive AMS, the first step that I believe would be to actually talk to these resource groups and see that what they actually want, because I might not really know what students need in this matter, so I would really go out and talk to the resource groups. And then second, I would prefer a diplomatic, on the first approach, I would be diplomatic with student care, but I believe that when you are advocating on behalf of students and certain resource groups, it's very important to be headstrong in some of the points, so I will necessarily do that. Thank you.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I think gender-affirming care is really important, and that's something that I should be working towards if I'm elected as VP Finance. In particular, I hope to work with, you know, trans and gender-diverse students in our student population to hear from them directly to see what kind of services they would prefer. Because I think it's important to, you know, have these conversations with students with consistency and with regularity instead of having one meeting in the whole year and just leaving it at that. I also want to bring up the point that I'm really interested in introducing new resource groups into our current system. I think right now there's still a lot of groups that aren't being represented, and I will be very flexible with working with possibly new applications for resource groups, as well as working with the Vice President Administration of the next year to do so. Thank you.
Thank you so very much.
All right. There seems to be a hesitancy and reluctance to address sexualized violence on campus. What are you going to do, if elected, to address this in a tangible way and ensure that the SASC is supported and funded for future years? We'll start with Rita.
Yeah, so first and foremost, I want to make sure that, you know, the SASC is properly funded. And even with the referendum, even if it, you know, it does not increase fees, I'll be working really hard to reallocate the budget to make sure that we can adjust accordingly so that the services of the SAS office is not impeded by this. For example, I can decrease the amount of spending that we do on some administrative tasks that don't involve the wages of the people working right now, because I think we really want to support the people who are already contributing their time to the SAS, the Sexual Assault Support Center. Furthermore, I think just being able to work with them to see what are some ways we can use our funds to support their programs and services. And, you know, being able to support individuals is really the key thing here. Making sure, you know, the services that we offer, like SafeLock and every other student service that is under our organization, is truly benefiting the students and accessible for everyone. Thank you.
So first of all, we do have a SASC referendum question this year. I'm in support of that. They really need the fees. As I was reading a recent CTV News article, they receive nearly triple cases this year. And one of my the values that I plan to bring to office are transparency, accountability, outreach, and inclusivity. So I would focus it under my outreach. I believe that may it be sexual health, may it be climate injustice, may it be social justice, we really need to educate the students or may it be the Senate, the Council, so that they actually know what is going on at the grassroots level. I would certainly advocate holding workshops and more events around this. That is why I also plan to introduce a social justice fund that empowers and fuels such campaigns. And then, of course, as I have heard from many AMS current execs.
All right, that is time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Please make sure to vote in the AMS elections. The polls are open from March 7th till 11th, and that's our show for today. This has been Against the Current by CITR News, and we are here every Thursday at 3 p.m. bringing you local news. And stay tuned for more amazing programming.